Okay, today's daf is about Daf Kuf Yud Dal. We're at the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bet. We were speaking about the concept of clothing being for Kavod Shabbat, and we got into some agarata on Ruth and hints made in Ruth to her future being the mother of the Davidic dynasty. V'tachat kvodo yekid yakad yekod kikod esh. Right? So all those yekodim basically translate as follows, that underneath his honor will be a fire kindled like a burning fire. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'tachat kivodo, v'lo kivodo mamash. Underneath his kavod, underneath his honor, but not in his actual, but not in the actual honor. Now his honor, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan ta'ame, the Rabbi Yochanan kare lema'aneg mechurotai. Right? That Rabbi Yochanan holds, Rabbi Yochanan calls his clothing his honor, and therefore underneath his clothing is where the fire is going to be. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan believed that this was saying that the soldiers in question, who they were talking about, are going to be burnt, but their clothing will remain intact. But that's just another allusion to the fact that Rabbi Yochanan believes that kavod is a reference to the clothing. Rabbi Elazar Omer v'tachat kivodo, tachat kivodo mamash, right? Meaning when it says that tachat kivodo doesn't mean underneath the kavod, rather it means in the place of the kavod. So in the place of the kavod, that is where the fire will be. However, Rabbi Elazar does not hold that kavod refers to clothing. So ultimately, it amounts to the same conclusion. They both believe that the flesh is burning and the clothes are not burning, because Rabbi Yochanan says it's underneath what is kavod. What is kavod, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is clothing, and therefore underneath it is the skin. And Rabbi Elazar believes that it is in the place of the kavod, but the kavod doesn't refer to clothing, according to Rabbi Elazar. So it amounts to the same shita. They just get there in different ways. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar tachat kivodo kisrifat bnei Aharon. Right, that tachat kivodo means that they are having that they will be burnt in the way that the sons of Aaron were burnt. Malahan srifat nishma v'guf kayam, avkan srifat nishma v'guf kayam. Right, so that the srifa, the fire, does not burn the body at all. Rather, just burns the soul, like it happened to the bnei Aharon. Amar Rabbi Acha bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Minayin leshinui begadim min Torah, right? So, where do we know that you should change your clothing to meet the task at hand? Shneamar upasharet begadav velavash begadim acherim, right? So it says that he changed his garments. The Kohen Gadol changes his garments and wears different garments for a different task in the Mishkan or the Beit Hamikdash. So you have different tasks require different clothing. V'tana debei Rabbi Shmuel limedcha Torah derech eretz. The Torah was teaching you Derech Eretz, Begadim Shabishel Ben Kedera L'Rabo, Al Yimzog Ben Kos L'Rabo. Right, the clothes that you cook food in for your master, you don't pour him a cup. Meaning, different situations require different dress that is appropriate for the situation. Amar B'chia Bar Abba, Amar B'Yochanan, Ginayhu Tamid Chacham Shietze B'min Alim HaMetulalim L'Shuk. Right, that it's speaking about the importance of proper dress. A Tamid Chacham who needs to represent himself in a dignified manner should not go out with patched shoes into a marketplace. V'ha Rabbi Acha bar Chanina nafik, but didn't Rabbi Acha bar Chanina go out with patched shoes? Am Rabbi Acha bereder of Nachman b'talai al gabe talai. Right, so that's al gav talai. Right, yeah, with patches on top of patches when you have a problem. Right, so if you have one hole and you just need to put a patch over it, that's one thing. But if the entire thing becomes patches on patches, that's when it really looks disrespectful. And the Talmud Chacham should wear more dignified clothing. V'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol Talmid Chacham shenimtza ravav al begado chayav mita. Right, and any Talmud Chacham who has grease found on his clothing is liable to death. Right, for how much he disgraces the Torah by dressing in such a sloppy manner. Shenemar kol misanai ahavu mavet, as it says that all those who hate me, referencing the Torah, love death. Al tekri misanai ela Sinai, rather that anyone who causes others to hate me is liable to the death to death. Now, a Talmud Chacham is a representative of the Torah, and so if he behaves in a manner that causes others to look down upon the Torah or to hate the Torah, then he is liable to death according to this pasuk. And so because the Talmud Chacham is a representative of the Torah, so everything that he does represents the Torah, so if you dress in an embarrassing manner, or in a sloppy manner, or you behave in a despicable manner, you're going to be causing others to hate the Torah. Ravina Amar Ravad Itmar. So that that it was not, when we said that the stain on his garments, that was not ravav, rather ravad, right? So it wasn't a stain of grease, rather it was a stain of semen. Velo pligi, ha beglima, vaha belavusha, right? And it's actually not having a machloket, it just, it depends which article of clothing we're talking about. If we're talking about the cloak, right, that's when, that's where the grease stain is an embarrassment. And if we're talking about the, undergarment, that's when the semen stain is an embarrassment. Ve'amar b'chia bar abba, amar b'yochanan, mai dichtiv, kasher halach avdi yishayahu, arum v'yachev. So, what is, meant by the pasuk that says about Yishayahu that he apparently was walking around naked and barefoot? That's no way for a Talmud Chacham to be. It can't possibly mean that, that he was walking around naked. That's crazy to assume that Yishayahu was just walking around without any clothing. Arum v'gadim bluim v'yachef menelim ha'metulalim. Right, so that the nakedness referred to his referred to worn out clothing, and barefoot referred to shoes with patches on them. Basically, he wasn't dressing in a manner that was that was appropriate of his stature. Tanan hatam ravav al hamardea chotzetz. Right. So we learn that when you have grease on a saddle cloth that you put on top of a donkey that you sit upon, that serves as a chatzitza. If you want to, if something needs to be purified in a mikveh, so then the entirety of the object needs to come in contact with the water of the mikveh, and it can't have anything on it. So some things are not really considered things that separate between the object and the water. Like if it's a tiny thing and you don't care that it's there, you're not particularly makbid on it, so then that's fine. However, even if it's small, but you don't want it there, that becomes a an intervention between the object and the water, stopping it from touching one another. So, if you have a grease stain on a saddle cloth and you have to put it in the mikvah, that's going to serve as a separation. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer ad ki isar ha'italki. As long as it is the size of an Italian isar. V'al ha'begadim nitzar echad eno chotzetz. And when it comes to the clothing, if it's only on one side, if it only shows up on one side, then that's not going to intervene because it's very small, and so you're not going to be makbid. Mishnei tzarin chotzetz. However, if it can be if it can show through both sides, that's a big stain, and that's going to stop it from being purified in the mikvah. Rabbi Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Shmuel af mitzad echad chotzes. So according to Rabbi Yehuda's shita, in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, even from one side is intervenes and stops the clothing from being tahor. By minei Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish mir Rabbi Chanina mirdat mitzad echad u'mishnet tzadin. Okay, so we spoke about that the clothing there's a machloket as to whether or not it's from one side or from two sides. But when we said the saddle cloth, right? What do we mean there? The saddle cloth is when we said that it intervenes. Are we Davka talking about from both sides or even from one side of the saddle cloth? Amarle zola shamati kiyotzeva shamati. Says, you know, I never heard that, but I heard something similar. It's not, and we learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi Omer, shel banayin mitzer echad, right? So, garments of banayin, clothing of banayin. When you talk about what banayin means, right? If there's a stain on one side, it's going to be chotetz, v'shel bur mishnet tzadim. However, when it comes to an ignoramus, the clothing of an ignoramus, so there, davka on both sides is going to serve to intervene, because an ignoramus is less makbid on the appearance of his clothing than a banai would be. V'lo tehem yirdat chashuva mibigdo shel ha'aret, right? And you wouldn't assume that a saddle cloth, which is a cloth put on a donkey, is going to be more chashuv than the clothing worn even by an ignoramus. He's a human being. His clothing is going to be more significant. So if for the human being, it's only considered a chatzitza once it's on both sides, then kal v'chomer, you gotta assume that when a saddle cloth is put on a donkey, we're only gonna be makbid when it's, shows on both sides. My benign, by the way, what are benign? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, eil tamir chachamim, she'oskin bevinyano, shel olam kol yemeyen. Right? Benign refers to tamir chachamim who are involved in the building of the world their entire lives. Right? They're constructing the world in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's image. That's what they're called, builders. Very beautiful idea. And because of that, because they have to be very makbid on their appearance, so even if they have a grease that only shows on one side, that's going to serve as a chatzitza. They don't want it there, because it's a disgrace for the Talmud Chacham to walk around that way. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, ezu Talmud Chacham, shemachzirin lo aveda betviut ha'ayin. Right? Betviut ha'ayin, ze ha'makbid al chalukah lohofcho. Right? So how do we define a Talmud Chacham? Well, there are different calibers of Talmud Chacham. There's a type of Talmud Chacham for whom, if he just says, that object is mine, we're allowed to return it to him. Generally, if someone loses an object, and he wants to say, hey, that's my lost object, we would say, okay, do you have a siman? Do you, can you produce a certain sign that this is your object, right? But a Talmud Chacham comes and says, that's my object, he doesn't need a sign, right? We can trust him. Now, how do you get to that status of Talmud Chacham, right? Well, it's someone who is very careful about his about the way about his dress to appear dignified, such that that if he accidentally put on his cloak inside out, so he would turn it around so you couldn't tell, right? Because he wanted to preserve this. He wanted to look in a dignified manner with his clothing. And who is the Talmid Chacham who has reached a status where he can be the leader of a Jewish community? Right? So that's someone who you can ask him a halacha on any topic and he would know the answer to. Not just the topic that he's studying, rather any topic you can ask him and he'd know the answer to in the halacha, even a little known Masechet, like Masechet Kala. Masechet Kala is just a series of Braitot that is less often learned, but he's even holding in that. V'am Rabbi Yochanan, Ezu Tamid Chacham, She B'nei Iro Mitzuvin Lasod Lo Melachto. And who's the status, who's the caliber of a Tamid Chacham that, that the people of his community do his work for him because he's learning. That's someone who abandons his own personal interests to deal purely with the matters of Shemaim. But that only the responsibility upon his community to support him only covers his bread, right? So basically just the bare necessities that keeps him alive, right? So that he has bread to eat, that's the only thing they're responsible for. They're not responsible to give him a house, they're not responsible to pay his bills, they're responsible that he should have bread to eat if he decides to learn Torah the entire with his whole life, or to do mitzvot his entire life, dedicate the entirety of his life to Shemaim. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ezu Talmid Chacham, Kol Sholin Oto Halacha Bechol Makom Ve'omra. Right, Lamai Nafkamina. So okay, so we said that who is considered a Talmid Chacham? Someone who can answer a halachic matter in no matter what you ask him, no matter what you ask of him. And what's the okay? So what's the Nafkamina of that ruling that to be a Talmid Chacham you have to be able to answer from every place? Leminuye Parnas Alatzibur. The Nachmin is as follows, right? Do you want to appoint him as a leader? Right? So if he can answer questions of a specific Masechta, then you can make him a leader of his particular area, his particular community, right? So if he's big enough Talmud Chacham that he can answer questions adequately in the Masechta that he's learning, so then he can be the leader of his community, right? But if he can answer questions in anything that he's ever learned in every Masechta, then he can be the Rosh Shiva, right? Responsible for many communities. Rav Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Elu Kelim Ha'ulyarin Habayim Midinat Hayam. Right? So going back to a second interpretation of what Banayin means, right? These are clothing of bathhouse, of the attendants in bathhouses that come from overseas. Right, so it's a very specific type of clothing that apparently was very nice, very fine, and there would be makbid if there was any stain on it, even if it was only showing on one side. But is that to suggest that their clothing are white, meaning that we make an assumption that the clothing are white because they're very nice and you would be makbid on a stain even on one side because it's clearly visible. But does that suggest that the clothing of the bathhouse attendants, according to Rish Lakish, would be white? But didn't Rabbi Yane say to his children, he says, my sons, do not bury me in white clothing or in black clothing. Right? So don't bury in white clothing because maybe I will not merit to be in Gan Eden. And apparently in Gan Eden, everyone's walking around in white clothing. So maybe I'm not going to merit to be in white clothing. Maybe we're not going to be merit to be in Gan Eden. And then I'm just going to be in white clothing amongst people in Gehenim who are all wearing black. Right, shechorim shema ezake vayek avel ben chatanim. Right, and don't bury me in black clothing because maybe I will merit being in Gan Eden, and then I'm just going to be, and then I'm going to be the only guy wearing black amongst the tzaddikim in Gan Eden who are all wearing white. Ela bekelim ha'uliyarin habayim midinat hayam. Rather, you should bury me in those clothing that the bathhouse attendants wear that comes from overseas. Alma sumkeninhu. Right, so they clearly couldn't be white; they must be colored because it says don't bury in white. Lokasha ha'beglim. Right, so there are two different things here, right? One is the cloaks. Now the cloaks were allowed to be colored, and one is the the undergarments, and those could be white, right? That's the distinction we're making. Rabbi Yishmael Omer Mekaplin, right? So going back to the Mishnah, Rabbi Yishmael talks about folding garments. Tan Rabbanan, Olat Shabbat B'Shabbato, right? The Ola of Shabbat can be offered on its own Shabbat. Limid al Chelve Shabbat. Limit al chelve Shabbat shekrevin beYom Kippurim. So that teaches me that that the fats, the leftover fats that weren't completely burnt up from the korbanot on Shabbat can be brought on Yom Kippur. So what that means is that the korbanot offered on Shabbat, when they have some extra fat that doesn't get completely burnt off, you generally burn it off that night. What if that night is Yom Kippur? So according to the Rabbanon, you're allowed to burn it up that night, even though it's Yom Kippur. Yachol af shel Yom Kippurim Shabbat. Now, you may think that you could also then burn the korbanot of Yom Kippur on Shabbat that night, if Shabbat is after Yom Kippur, like Yom Kippur is on Erev Shabbat. Talmud Lomar b'Shabbato, right? So the pasuk gives you a mute and it limits the scope and says b'Shabbato, right? Only it's on its own Shabbat. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. That's Rabbi Yishmael's shita, that you may, that's how he learns it from the psukim, that you may burn the leftover fats from Shabbat to Yom Kippur, but not Yom Kippur to Shabbat. Rabbi Kiva Omer b'Shabbato limed al chelve Shabbat shekrevim b'Yom Tov, right? So Rabbi Kiva learns from Shabbato that the fats of Shabbat may be burnt up on Yom Tov, yachol af b'Yom Kippurim, and you may have thought even the leftover fats from Shabbat can be burnt on Yom Kippur, Talmud Lomar b'Shabbato, right? So b'Shabbato must be done on its Shabbat, and it cannot be done on Yom Kippur, right? So the question is, what we use Olat Shabbat for? According to Rabbi Shmuel, we learn it to learn that you can burn the fats of the korban of Shabbat even on Yom Kippur. But B'Shabbato comes to say, but not Yom Kippur to Shabbat. Rabbi Akiva holds that it means you can burn the leftover fats of Shabbat on Yom Tov. However, not Yom Kippur. K'shetimtze lomar l'divrei Rabbi Yishmael nedarim v'nedavot krevim b'Yom Tov. Okay, so we're going to find there's a related machloket here that explains Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael's shitas in both places, right? So Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva have a machloket as to whether or not nidarim v'nidavot, which are basically voluntarily sacrifices, right? A nidava, literally, to volunteer or to offer up, is a voluntary sacrifice, and a neder is something that you vow to bring, right? So it's voluntary. You have no obligation in the matter. Now, if you have an obligation to bring a korban on Yom Tov, so obviously you bring a korban on Yom Tov, but are you supposed to volunteer to bring a korban on Yom Tov? Can you do that? So according to Rabbi Shmuel, yes, you may. You can volunteer to bring a korban on Yom Tov, right? Because that is Rabbi Shmuel's shita, right? Why would you need that pasuk? I mean, what is the pasuk coming to teach you? He can't understand it like Rabbi Akiva does. The pasuk comes to teach you that you can burn the fats of the leftover fats of the korban on Yom Tov, because if you can volunteer to bring a korban on Yom Tov, you gotta assume all the more so you can burn the fats that you're supposed to be burning on Yom Tov, right? You have the korban, which is a chiyuv, and then you have the fats, which you are supposed to burn that night, but it's not me'akev. It doesn't stop you from fulfilling that obligation, from your obligation, but you still have a mitzvah to burn it that night, and then you would think on a lower level you have what is voluntary. So if Rabbi Shmuel believes that you could even do something entirely voluntary on Yom Tov, bring a korban voluntarily on Yom Tov, kal v'chomer, he would assume that you could bring, that you could burn the fats on Yom Tov. So he doesn't need that pasuk to tell you can bring it, that you can burn them on Yom Tov. Rather, what is v'chitzrich ra l'yom kippurim, right? So it must be that the pasuk is necessary to teach you about that it can be burnt on Yom Kippur, which is less obvious than Yom Tov. L'divrei Rabbi Akiva, nedarim v'nedavot ein krevin b'Yom Tov, v'chitzrich kra l'mishra b'Yom Tov. But according to Rabbi Akiva, his shita by bringing voluntary korban on Yom Tov is that you're not allowed to, right? You cannot volunteer to bring a korban on Yom Tov, right? You can bring it on a weekday, but not Yom Tov. You can only bring things you have to bring on Yom Tov. So that's why he needs a specific pasuk to tell you that you're allowed to burn the excess fats of the korban from Shabbat on Yom Tov. Amar Rabbi Zeira, ki havena Ki aveina bebavel. Hava amri hadatani yom kippurim shechaliot erev shabbat. Lo ayu tokin v'motzei shabbat. Lo ayu tokin v'motzei shabbat. Lo ayu mavdilin. Divrei hakolhi. Says when we were in Bavel, we would teach the following, right? That everyone agrees to the following principle. When Yom Kippur is on erev Shabbat, so Yom Kippur is coming to an end as Shabbat is beginning, so you don't blow the shofar Friday afternoon. And you don't make havdalah on Motzei Shabbat, right? Now, why would that be the case? Well, what do you blow the shofar for? You generally blow the shofar to indicate the first three blasts are to separate people from their malacha, to have people stop working, and the second three blasts are to tell people that that Shabbat is about to start and you need to cease all malacha. But because Yom Kippur is the same level of kedusha as Shabbat, or has the same iser malacha rather as Shabbat, there's really no need to blow the shofar. Meaning, what are you accomplishing by blowing the shofar? Blowing the shofar is an iser derabanan for Shabbat and Yom Tov, right? In which case, you'd only blow it if it was absolutely necessary to blow it. But what am I trying to stop you from doing that you'd be doing on Yom Kippur that you wouldn't be doing on Shabbat? It's unnecessary. And we thought that was, according to everyone's opinion, that it was totally unnecessary. Etchich el Yehuda berei derbi Shimon ben Pazi diyati v'kamar Rabbi Akiva hi... ki salikna lahatam. So when we went to Eretz Yisrael, eshgach le Yehuda bray the Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi the Yati v'kamar. We found Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, who's sitting and saying the following: Rabbi Akiva he what we just said is according to Rabbi Akiva. The e Rabbi Shmuel in kevan de amar chalvei Shabbat craving be Yom Kippurim litaka ki hechid lehave yadi de chalvei Shabbat craving be Yom Kippurim. Right. So you should blow the shofar to indicate that there is actually a difference between what you can do on Shabbat and Yom Kippur, right? Because you can burn the fats of the korban on Yom Kippur on Shabbat, but you can't burn the fats of the korban of Shabbat on Yom Kippur. So what we thought was the divrei hakol, there's no reason to blow the shofar because there's no differentiation between what you can and cannot do on Shabbat and Yom Kippur. We now understand that's only according to Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Yishmael says that there is a difference, right, with regarding the burning of the fats, right? In which case, I have a reason to blow the shofar now, which is to indicate to people that there's a difference between these 2 days. Now, it's interesting, right, because you have to note that what they're talking about is blowing the shofar at the end of Yom Kippur as Shabbat starts, because it's a minute to blow the shofar before Shabbat to let people know this, right? But burning the Korban of Shabbat on Yom Kippur is only relevant when Yom Kippur falls out on Yom Rishon, not on Yom Shishi, right? It's interesting. Meaning, you would think that what's the purpose of blowing the shofar? To differentiate between the Kedushas for a practical reason. To tell people that there is a practical difference between the two Kedushas that we're moving forward in right now. But it's not actually a practical difference, because where the difference is relevant, this is kind of a side point, but becomes relevant later, that where the difference is relevant is when Yom Kippur falls after Shabbat, because you can burn the fats on Motzei Shabbat. But where the question we're asking is when Yom Kippur is on Yom Shishi, and you're separating between Yom Kippur and Shabbat. So the difference exists when Yom Kippur is on Yom Rishon, but the question we're asking about blowing the shofar is when Yom Kippur is on Yom Shishi. So they're actually not blowing the shofar for a practical purpose to separate you from different levels of Kedusha. They're just blowing the shofar to tell you for your general knowledge that there is an actual difference. That's important to note. Right? Avamina le ana kohanim's reason him. Right? And then I said to him, no, you shouldn't actually have to blow the shofar. Why? Because the Kohanim are particularly diligent and they're not going to make those mistakes. Meaning, why do we blow the shofar? To separate the rest of the world from doing malacha, or to indicate that there's a difference in the level of Kedusha between 2 times, right? Now, if the only difference that exists is in the Kohanim's avoda to know whether or not you can burn the fats, we have a principle well, that the Kohanim are particularly diligent, and they're learned, and they're not going to come to make the same mistakes that that the rest of the nation would make. So even though, yes, I understand that you've pointed out a difference between the Kedushas of Yom Kippur and Shabbat, it's still not relevant to blow the shofar. Amar le mar kashisha b'rei d'rav chizda l'rav ashi mi amrin ha-Kohanim z'rizin hen. But do we really hold by that principle that the Kohanim are so diligent they're not going to come to make those mistakes? V'hatinan shalosh lehavtil et ha'am mimalacha shalosh lehavdil ben kodesh l'chol. Right? But didn't we teach that they would sound the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash, that we would sound the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash, the first three to separate the Am, the nation, from doing the Malacha, and the second three blasts of the shofar are to establish this time as a different level of Kedusha between Kodesh and Chol. Now, doesn't it stand to reason that if we're blowing the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash, we're trying to tell the Kohanim something? We're trying to tell them to stop their working? So we don't seem to be under this assumption that Kohanim don't need the shofar blasts. We have a shofar in the Mikdash to tell them to stop working, right? So this principle that you're relying on, the Kohanim are particularly diligent, you don't need to blow the shofar just for them, it's not necessarily true. Kedamar Abayis, so we answer like this, right? Rather, it's like Abayis stated, it is a totally different matter, but of particular relevance here. L'shar Amad de Yerushalayim, Machanami L'shar Amad de Yerushalayim. Rather, why Abayis said about something else that looked like you were doing it for the Kohanim, that it was actually for the rest of Yerushalayim, and here too it looks like you're doing it for the Kohanim, but it's actually for the rest of the of Yerushalayim. Now, what is that thing? Well, they would say they put the menorah, or Helini Hamalka, put a menorah at the entrance to the Beit HaMikdash. That way, when the sun rises, the menorah of gold starts to sparkle, and that tells everyone when you can start saying Kriyat Shema. However, we know that the Kohanim actually daven Kriyat Shema early to make sure they had enough time to do the Avoda, right? In which case, you'd have to ask, well, you know, why is it that you would need the sparkling of the menorah to tell you what time Kriyat Shema is when the sun rises, if the Kohanim would actually read Kriyat Shema before the sun rises? It must be, says Abaye, that the sparkling of the menorah is for everyone else's benefit and not for the Kohanim's benefit. Here too, we're going to say that the shofar, while it was blown in the Mikdash, was really for everyone else's benefit and not for their own. Rather, there is reason and they don't need it. V'litaka ki yechid ileida de leidai de shari be kinivat yarak mina mincha lamala. But here's another reason why you may be able to, why you should blow the shofar. Because there's something else that's allowed to do on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to do for Shabbat. You're not allowed to do hachana, right? You can't prepare from a holy day to a day that is chol. However, you know what you can do on Yom Kippur? You can start preparing the vegetables for the dish that you're going to cook after Yom Kippur, right? So you can start cutting up the vegetables, like chopping up vegetables, something that's not an iser malacha, even though that's technically preparation for a weekday. After Yom Kippur, you're allowed to do that. The Rabbanim made a special dispensation because dealing with the food that you're going to eat afterward is difficult. It adds difficulty to your fast. And the Torah says, "Ve'initim et nafshotichem," that we're not just trying to pass through the fast. We want the fast to be difficult for us. We want it to be particularly strenuous. That's, by the way, why Chazal tell you that they have a mitzvah to eat on the ninth day. And anyone who eats on the ninth day is as if he fasted both days. Because if you fill your stomach on one day, you expand it and make the fast more difficult on the next day, right? So the point is, we want to feel the fast. So how do you feel the fast? Well, if you start from after Mincha, they allowed this. If you start dealing with the vegetables on the fast day and you start preparing your food, you're going to struggle more. And therefore, they allowed to do it. But you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat. You can't prepare a dish for after Shabbat on Shabbat. So maybe you blow the shofar to differentiate between that level of Kedusha. That applies to everyone, not just to Kohanim. Am Rav Yosef Lefisha Ein Dochin Shvut Lahatir. Oh. When is it that we allow you to blow the shofar to separate you from doing malacha? To tell you that there's a difference between now and then, now you have to stop doing this malacha. You know we're not going to allow you to blow the shofar on Shabbat or Yom Kippur? To allow you to do something. No, blowing the shofar is legitimate if it stops you from doing malacha. But we don't allow you to blow the shofar in order to allow you to do more malacha. Right? We don't suspend the rabbinic prohibition against blowing the shofar in order to enable you to do more things. Alternative answer, and this is why we needed that explanation earlier, that it's not actually relevant to that year, rather just in future years to differentiate between the levels of Kedusha, that they permitted suspending the rabbinic prohibition about blowing the shofar in order to permit something immediately, but not just to tell you for your general information that something is allowed. What does that mean? Well, because you'd be blowing the shofar on Friday afternoon, let's say, which was Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur fell out on Yom Shishi. You'd be blowing the shofar Yom Shishi in the afternoon before Shabbat, but the actual nafka mina of Shabbat and Yom Kippur is only relevant when Shabbat comes before Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur is on Yom Rishon. So yes, there's a difference in Kedusha that's important to note, and that the shofar tells me that, but it's not telling me that for that year, because the only difference is when Shabbat comes before Yom Kippur, not when Yom Kippur comes before Shabbat. But where I'm asking if I can blow the shofar is when Yom Kippur comes before Shabbat, because that's going to be the problem. If Yom Shishi isn't Yom Kippur, then of course you blow the shofar. So where do they allow you to suspend the rabbinic prohibition of blowing the shofar? Only when you need to know something for that year, that right then and there, but not to blow the shofar. So when Yom Kippur is on Yom Shishi, so that you know in a future year when Yom Kippur is on Yom Rishon, there's a difference. That they didn't allow. V'shvut kirova hitiru v'hatnan yom tov shechaliot erev shabbat tokin v'lo mavdilin motzei shabbat mavdilin v'lo tokin. Is it really true that they permitted suspending? Meaning, what we just said was that we first said that they would not suspend the rabbinic prohibition about blowing the shofar in order to matir something, only to make it usser, right? Only to tell you to stop doing something. And then we had a second answer, which was no, you would blow the shofar in order to matir something, but only right away and not for after years potentially. And then we challenged that. Now, is it really true that they would suspend the rabbinic prohibition in order to matir something right away? Well, didn't we teach in a Mishnah that if Yom Tov falls out on Erev Shabbat, then you blow the shofar on Yom Tov, which is Erev Shabbat, before Shabbat, but you don't do Havdalah. Now, if it falls out on Motzei Shabbat, you do Havdalah, but you don't blow the shofar. Now, v'amai, why would you not blow the shofar Motzei Shabbat before Yom Tov? Litaka ki heche de leida de shari b'shchita la'alter, right? Maybe you should blow the shofar to tell people that immediately shchita is now allowed, right? There are things that you can do on Yom Tov that you can't do on Shabbat, right? Slaughtering animals for the sake of a Yom Tov meal, cooking that food for the sake of the Yom Tov meal. That is a heter la'alter that constitutes a difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov. So why not blow the shofar on Shabbat? It's not a heter for potential, you know, years to come. It's a heter for right now to tell you what you can do on Yom Tov. El mechor takad Rav Yosef. Yeah, we actually have to then reject what we stated initially about blowing the shofar for an immediate heter as opposed to a long term heter. Amrabi Zera, Amrav Huna, the Amri La, Amrabi Abba, Amrav Huna, Yom Kippurim Shechaliot B'Shabbat, Asur B'Kenivat Yarak. Right? So, what if Yom Kippur is on Shabbat? Same day. Right? Then you're not allowed to prepare the vegetables beforehand. Right? You may think that you're allowed to because it's Yom Kippur, but you're not allowed to because it's Shabbat. And that's how we pask it. Right? Amrav Mana, Tana, Minayin Yom Kippurim Shechaliot B'Shabbat, Shasur B'Kenivat Yarak. Right? Now, we can bring a Tanaic proof for this idea that you're not allowed to from a Furish Breita, which asks, how do you know that on Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbat, I'm not allowed to cut up the vegetables? Talmud Lomar Shabbaton, Shavut, right? Because the Torah says that it's a Shabbaton, right? A Shabbaton, meaning what does Shabbaton add? Shabbat Shabbaton. Like what does that add? It tells you that it's a complete and entire day of rest, more so than anything else. It supersedes everything else. There is no other Shabbat like the Shabbat of Shabbat, not even Yom Kippur. There is an additional element of your responsibility to rest on Shabbat that you're not even allowed to prepare from it for Motzei Shabbat, which is unlike anything else, because Yom Kippur you'd be allowed to, right? So that's what it tells us, that Shabbat, that whenever we're talking about Shabbat, it is absolutely... it is an absolute day of rest. an absolute day of rest with no dispensation. Lemai, okay, so now what does knivat yarak mean in this braita? So again, we were taking for granted that meant preparing vegetables. Right? We were taking for granted that knivat yarak was talking about preparing vegetables, and we were asked, and we want to bring this as a proof that you can't prepare vegetables on Shabbat, that falls on Yom Kippur. Right? But the Gemara doesn't take that for granted. First, it quotes the Braita, which says that, that you can't do knivat yarak. And then it says, lemai. Well, what type of, knivat yarak just means cutting vegetables. What type of cutting vegetables are we talking about? Ilema lemalacha, vachtiv lo taseko malacha. Meaning, what was your havamina? That cutting up vegetables was about cutting them from the ground. So, if you want to say that that's what he was talking about, that that's what the Braita is talking about, this is how you know you can't cut vegetables from the ground, well, that's not how you know. It says you can't do any malacha, and cutting up vegetables from the ground is a malacha. So, the Braita must be talking about something that I would not have known was usher beforehand. So it must be referring to cutting up vegetables in preparation for a dish, because the malacha of cutting up vegetables is already covered, in which case I know that I'm not allowed to cut up vegetables for a dish. Right? So now an argument in that statement, that Yom Kippur falls on Shabbat, according to Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, you're allowed to cut up the vegetables. But I have an easy challenge for that statement. What's going to be my challenge? Well, the Braita that I just brought in to prove the other one. Right? I just stated that, that this whole Braita that says that we learn that you cannot cut vegetables on Shabbat because of Shabbat Shabbaton, and that gives me the additional element of rest that I'm not allowed to do, and maybe you thought that meant the malacha of cutting vegetables, that is already covered by Lo Taseko Malacha, in which case, it must be talking about preparing vegetables, in which case I have no excuse, and there's no way I can prepare vegetables for after Shabbat on Shabbat itself, right? That's an excellent proof for the other side. So how then does Rabbi Yochanan maintain the Shita that you be allowed to cut up vegetables on Shabbat for Motzei Shabbat when it falls on Yom Kippur, if I have a mefurish braita that suggests otherwise? Lo leolam lemalacha ulaavor aleha baaseh velo taseh. So says Rabbi Yochanan, no, that braita is not a proof that you may not prepare vegetables on Shabbat. Rather, that braita is just telling you, that braita is telling you that you can't do the malacha of cutting vegetables. Oh, but you want to say I already knew that I couldn't do the malacha of cutting vegetables? I already knew that, but now I'm learning it from the lashon of shvut, or Shabbat Shabbaton. The malacha is an iser. It's a lo tase. It's a don't do this. And now I have an ase as well. Not only can I not cut vegetables, I have a responsibility to rest. Not cutting vegetables is what I can't do. Resting is what I must do. And now I have an ase and a lo tase around it. And that's different than just having an ase. We don't have a lot of time, but just as a side point to understand what this means, there's a difference between if something is just a lo tase or if something is an ase and a lo tase. Probably the most recognized difference is whenever you have an ase and a lo tase, a chiyuv that intrinsically coincides with an iser, the ase is docha de lo tase. If you have a chiyuv that can only be accomplished through the breaking of the prohibition, you do the ase and not the lo tase. But if you have a chiyuv that coincides with both a prohibition and a chiyuv, then it no longer pushes that off. And so now, what is Rabbi Yochanan saying about cutting vegetables? It is both a lotase of cutting vegetables, but also an ase of Shabbaton, in which case, it's a totally different halacha, and that's why we needed the pasuk, but it's not telling me that we're talking about preparing vegetables. Tanik avadid Rabbi Yochanan, yom kibirim shechal liyot v'shabbat, mutar b'knivat yarak. Right? And here's a good proof for Rabbi Yochanan's shita, because the Braita was taught, in accordance with his opinion, that on Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbat, you're allowed to cut up vegetables. Mifatzin be'egozim. Furthermore, you can crack nuts for a meal after Yom Kippur. Mifarkasin berimonim, and you can open up the pomegranates for a meal. Mina mincha lamala, as long as it's after the mincha time. Mipnei agmat nefesh, because that adds to the difficulty of the fast. Debe Rabbi Yehuda mekanve kerava. So the house, Kirava, not Kirava, not like Rava, rather, they would prepare cabbage on Yom Kippur that fell on Shabbat, Nibe Rabba Gardi Kare, and the house of Rabba would peel pumpkins, to get ready for the meal afterward. Kivan the Chaza Havu Ka Mecharfe, but Rabba noticed that people started doing this too early. The heter was only from after mincha. People were started doing it all day. Amarlo ata igarta mima'arava mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan de Asir says that Rabbi Yochanan sent a letter to Eretz Yisrael saying we really need to stop this practice because people are taking advantage of it and they're starting too early. So now the divrei hakol, you're not allowed to prepare on Shabbat that falls on Yom Kippur. Hadron alach eluk sharim.